on digital radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, on Twitter, YouTube, Twitch.tv, and Facebook. The Sportscast. Expect the unexpected.
The Top 25 Rundown presented by The Sportscast.
This is the Top 25 Rundown. And here's your host, Alan West.
Good evening and welcome to the Top 25 Rundown presented by the Sportscast. Today is April 17th, 2024. If you haven't yet, please subscribe on all your channels, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch.tv, and Apple Podcasts. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating review. It'll help us out tremendously. We are also on DAB Digital Radio. You can listen to us on your smart speaker, play Sportscast. Visit us on the Sportscast.net. Also follow us on Twitter, the Sportscast1. Check it out at the Sportscast in the iOS App Store. Hello, my name is Alan West. Welcome to the Top 25 Rundown. It's already been a crazy week, everybody, with the first sanctions leveled against Michigan, but they still have more to come. You still have to wait to see what happens with Connor Stallions, although right now it kind of feels like they got a slap on the wrist, but let's wait and see what happens. The big news of the day, though, is this was released at 3:28 on ESPN. NCAA approves new transfer rule allowing immediate eligibility. A new NCAA transfer rule will allow all undergraduate athletes to transfer and play immediately to meet specific academic requirements, as the Division I Council on Wednesday approved emergency legislation announced by the NCAA. The decision isn't final until the meeting's on Tuesday, and the rule still needs to be formally approved by the NCAA's executive board Monday, but that is expected to be a formality. The rule of eligibility to any athletes who have transferred during the 2023-2024 academic year, including the football players who entered the transfer portal Tuesday and during this window, as long as they're academically eligible and meeting progress toward degree requirements at their new school. The legislation will not limit the amount of times that an athlete can transfer, and there are still two transfer windows, but they can't transfer mid-year and play for a second school in the same season. Although the new rule is tied to academic progress, some in college athletics have expressed concern about the long-term implications for graduation rates. One of the questions we have to ask ourselves is, at what point does a degree still matter? Oregon coach Dan Lanning told ESPN in a recent interview, I think it's going to make it harder and harder if guys become multi-year transfer guys for them to actually have a college degree. If you graduate, there's a lot of times it makes sense. Change schools as many times as you want if you graduate. But on the same note, if somebody's changing schools three times, I'm wondering what their progress toward a degree really looks like. I think that's something everyone should probably have some awareness of. Previously, the NCAA's one-time transfer rule allowed athletes to play immediately at the first school they transferred to, but then they had to sit out a year if they transferred again, or apply to the NCAA for a waiver to compete immediately. In December, the NCAA proposed this policy in reaction to a West Virginia judge's ruling intended to stop the organization from enforcing its bylaw barring athletes from transferring multiple times and playing right away. The NCAA agreed to terms on a preliminary injunction that runs through at least the end of the academic year. In January, the U.S. Department of Justice joined a lawsuit against the NCAA's transfer rules, a suit that argues that the limitations on transfers violates antitrust law. According to the amended complaint for injunctive relief filed in January, the NCAA's transfer bylaw unjustly restrains the ability of these college athletes to engage in the market for their labor as NCAA Division I college athletes. College football's 15-day transfer window is open. Players have until April 30th to enter the portal. They don't have to find a new school by then, and they can choose to remain with their current team, but they have 15 days to decide whether they want to transfer. With these rule changes, NCAA members continue to prioritize long-term academic success for college athletes who transfer while supporting their opportunity to compete immediately, said Alina Taylor, Florida's Deputy Athletic Director and Chair of the Council. We hope that this practical approach to transfer eligibility requirements will encourage student athletes to make well-informed decisions about transferring and the impact such a move could have on their ability to graduate on time and their degree of choice, particularly as it relates to transferable credits. The D1 Council also moved forward on legislation that would allow schools to be more actively involved in securing sponsorship deals for their athletes. Schools would still not directly pay athletes, but they could facilitate NIL opportunities between third parties and athletes. So basically, the issue that you had with North Carolina and Florida State during the year, where the players were ineligible to play until the NCAA tried to make them seem like they weren't the bad guys when they told them they couldn't play. Then at the last second switched, oh yeah, you can play now. Basically now the NCAA is saying, yeah, you can go wherever you want. As long as you're academically cleared and as long as you're going to make sure you make a difference, go ahead. But Lanning's right. If you're going to be transferring every year, depending on how much credits you're working toward, it really just is going to be, I don't want to say impossible, but it's definitely going to be challenging watching how this is going to go down. So I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on this because it sounds really weird. So we'll just have to see if the NCAA made the right choice and just how they plan on making sure that whatever they did was the right thing to do. And that was according to ESPN, Heather Dinich. Also according to ESPN, breaking news from yesterday, Michigan reaches settlement with NCAA for recruiting violations. Michigan will serve 3 years of NCAA probation, pay a fine, and face recruiting restrictions after the university and five current or former football employees reached an agreement with the NCAA's enforcement staff on recruiting violations and coaching activities by non-coaching staff members, the NCAA announced Tuesday. The agreed-upon penalties include a one-year show cause order for the participating individuals. The portion of the case involves former Michigan coach Jim Harbaugh, as fired by the charges in late January, will be considered separately by the Committee of Infractions, and then it will determine its full decision according to release the NCAA. Tom Mars, Harbaugh's attorney, told ESPN that not agreement with the case until seeing media reports Tuesday. Although Mars doesn't know whether Harbaugh would participate, they were unaware about the discussions to resolve the case. Michigan agreed to violations involving impermissible in-person recruiting, impermissible tryouts, exceeding the number of allowed accountable coaches when non-coaching staff members engage in on- and off-field coaching activities, including providing technical and tactical skills introduction to players. Today's joint resolution pertains to the University of Michigan Athletic Department and several former and current employees, Michigan Athletic Director Ward Manuel said in a prepared statement. We are pleased to reach a resolution on this matter so our student athletes and our football program can move forward. We have no additional information and cannot comment further on other aspects of the NCAA inquiries. Michigan and staff members who were involved are allowed to immediately begin serving their penalties while awaiting the committee's final decision on the remaining contested portion of the case. Per NCAA protocol, we are not identifying individuals, Michigan Associate Athletic Director Kurt Savoda told ESPN. I can note that no further game restrictions will be served by anyone who is still on the U of M staff. Third-year Michigan coach Sharon Moore was suspended for the season opener last season when he was the offensive coordinator as part of the school's self-imposed penalties for violating NCAA rules. Harbaugh also served a three-game suspension to start the 2023 season because of NCAA recruiting violations. Michigan agreed the underlying violations demonstrated a head coach responsibility violation and the former football head coach failed to meet his responsibility to cooperate with the investigation, according to the NCAA. The university also agreed it failed to deter and detect the impermissible recruiting contacts and didn't ensure that the football program adheres to the rules for non-coaching staff members. The committee's final decision, including potential violations and penalties for Harbaugh, is pending. Michigan is also under a separate NCAA investigation for an elaborate off-campus sign-stealing system led by former staffer Connor Stallions. The Michigan enforcement staff notified Michigan officials in the Big Ten about the allegations on October 18, 2023. The agreement between the NCAA and Michigan that was announced Tuesday is unrelated. So basically, just saying that there's going to be more fallout from what happened with the Connor Stallions situation, and we will keep watching on that. In news that's outside of college sports, I saw that Jonte Porter from the Raptors got banned from the NBA for gambling violations. And it showed that Porter had, in 4 years, made over $2 million, at least. But his payout was $21,695 in total for everything that he won. So Adam Silver had talked about that he was going to make a swift decision and make sure that you understand he couldn't gamble, and today he made sure that he did, and now unfortunately Jonte Porter will not be able to do that anymore. So while it sucks, we wish him the best of luck, and we'll see what happens with that. Now, there's a different article today for college football that pertains to service academy athletes. We're going to get to that a little bit later. In draft news, unfortunately, former defensive lineman A.J. Simon, who was hoping to be selected next to the NFL draft, he died today at the age of 25. He had started his career at Bloomberg University and then transferred to Albany. He had 12.5 sacks last season for Albany, and he was a 2023 All-CAA first team selection. Thoughts and prayers go out to his family, and we will see another person pass away too early. It's right before the draft, so I've got a feeling they'll probably do something at the draft in memory of him. We'll just wait and see about that. Now, in a case that's been going on for a long time, Larry Nassar, for everything that he did, not only with the women's gymnastics team, but also Michigan State, Justice Department today announced that they're going to pay around 100 victims of Dr. Nassar, approximately $100 million, for the FBI's failures to properly investigate reports of Nassar's sexual assaults against top gymnasts and others, according to a report in the Wall Street Journal. If it becomes final to push the total amount of settlements in the different legal cases of Nassar to nearly $1 billion. There are two attorneys who represent more than 300 of the victims. They won't comment on it, but you can see how the FBI failed in this case, and even the director apologized to the survivors because there was information back in 2015 they could have taken care of. Then in July 2021, they waited 5 weeks, then didn't even transfer the material to the field office in Lansing. Whereas he was still treating patients at Michigan State. Some of the claimants who they have that have not finalized their settlement, including former Olympic gymnast Simone Biles, Ali Reyes, and Mikhail Maroney, former Team USA member Maggie Nichols. They all testified in the September 21 Senate Judiciary Committee hearing about the human cost of the failures. So, if this one is finalized, $100 million being paid by the Justice Department, it would follow a $380 million settlement in 2021 with USA Gymnastics and the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, and a $500 million settlement with Michigan State University. It's just a shame, because with them not doing anything, not only did Nasser mess with regular patients, but he messed with gymnasts trying to focus on the Olympics. And it's horrible, and well, with the FBI, with all the different sentiments and different people who didn't take responsibility, well, now they're getting to see exactly what they have sown and just how it's going to go from there for them. Now, another college football news, Steve Sarkisian admitted that he thought about it for about 60 seconds, but then he realized that where he is in Texas, he wasn't going to be leaving there. And I believe he got a contract extension right afterwards as well. So I think he definitely made the right choice in that respect. Last night, we had the WNBA draft. Anybody, Caitlin Clark was drafted number one to the Indiana Fever. And Moshe, we'll just go through the different teams real quick. Indiana Fever, they drafted Caitlin Clark at one, Celeste Taylor at 15 from Ohio State, and Leilani Correa from Florida at 27. The Sparks drafted Cameron Rink, number 2 from Stanford, Rakea Jackson from Tennessee at 4, and Mackenzie Flores from USC at 28. Chicago Sky, they picked Camila Cardoso from South Carolina at 3, Angel Reese from LSU at 7, Brianna Maxwell Gonzaga at 13. The Mystics, she picked number 6, Aliyah Edwards from UConn, Kylan Trong from Gonzaga 21, and Nastja Klaasens from Belgium at 30. The Atlanta Dream, they picked Nadia Puak from Australia at 12, then Isabel Borlas from Australia at 20, then Matilde Villa from Italy at 32. The Las Vegas Aces at 16 picked Aisha Fair from Syracuse at 16, Kate Martin from Iowa at 18, Elizabeth Kidley from Virginia Tech at 24, and Angel Jackson from Jackson State at number 36. New York Liberty picked Markeisha Davis from Ole Miss at 11, Ismary Martinez from Arizona at 17, Jessica Carter from Mississippi State at 23, and Caitlin Davis from USC at number 35. The Connecticut Suns picked at number 10, Lila Lakin from France, Tatiana, number 10 pick, Tatiana Jackson from Kansas, number 19, Helen Poyo from Arizona at 22, and Abby Yu from Columbia at 34. The Phoenix Mercury picked Charisma Osborne from UCLA at 25, and Jazz Shelley from Nebraska at 29. The Dallas Wings picked J.C. Sheldon from Ohio State at number 5, Carlo Leite from France at number 9, and Ashley Owosu from Penn State at 33. The Minnesota Lynx picked Elisa Peely from Utah at number 8, and Kiki Jefferson from Louisville at number 31. The Seattle Storm picked Nika Mule from UConn at 14, and Mackenzie Holmes from Indiana at 26. So, congratulations to all those women, and we're going to see how all the picks go through training camp and just see what happens after that. Now we say congratulations and we wish you the best of luck. So looking at the transfer portal, we see that ECU defensive tackle Demonic Williams entered, ECU wide receiver Omega Blake, Missouri State wide receiver Raylan Sharp, Colorado tight end Shamon Madier, Michigan wide receiver Christian Dixon, Colorado center safety Vito Tisdale, Georgia Tech defensive lineman Eddie Kelly, Colorado linebacker Kahiri Manns, Washington defensive end Anthony James, Houston quarterback Lucas Coley, LSU wide receiver Ty Preen, Miami running back Trevante Citizen, Tennessee linebacker Samaj Burrell, Texas defenseman Jamon Tapp, University of Central Florida defensive end Nakai Martinez, quarterback Timmy McClain, and wide receiver Darren Lawrence have all entered the portal. Kentucky wide receiver Raymond Cottrell, Texas State defenseman Derek Brown, Oklahoma linebacker Shane Witter, East Carolina defensive back Cameron Smith, Colorado corner Kamani McClain, Missouri wide receiver Dennis Jackson, Colorado State wide receiver Justice Ross Simmons, Hawaii wide receiver New Zealand track star Eddie Osei Nikita, Arizona defensive back Warner, DJ Warner Jr., and offensive lineman Joseph Borjan. Hit linebacker Solomon DeShields, Utah offensive lineman Coley File, Utah defensive back Britton Allen, Utah State defenseman Paul Fitzgerald, Illinois defensive back Zachary Toby, Louisville defensive end Jermaine Lowley, and that's just a few that are in the portal. So we're going to see how not only it's going to change, but which players are going to be staying either at their school or if they're going to go to a different school, and how the NIL will provide for them, depending on the situation. Now that Caitlin Clark left Iowa, Villanova transfer Lucy Olson, a number three scorer in Division I women's basketball this past season at Villanova, she's going to come to Iowa. So she had been at Villanova her entire career, and we will see how that goes for Iowa. Congratulations to her, and good luck to Lucy Olson there. So looking at the men's basketball transfer rankings for the season, that's getting ready to start. We have Umar Ballo from Arizona enter the portal, number one. Donnell Davis from Florida Atlantic, number two. AJ Storr, number three from Wisconsin. Great Osabor, number four from Utah State. Tucker DeVries from Drake at number five. Ravi Avila, number six from Indiana State. Definitely be curious to see what happens there. Clifford Omorui from Rutgers at number seven. Jonas Idu from Tennessee at number eight. Kanan Carlisle from Stanford at number nine. Miles Rice from Washington State at number 10. Pop Isaacs from Texas Tech, number 11. Rylan Griffin, number 12 from Alabama. Aiden Mahaney from St. Mary's, number 13. Tyrese Hunter from Texas, number 14. Andres Stojakovic from Stanford, number 15. Terrence Edwards Jr. from James Madison, number 16. Zeke Mayo from South Dakota State, number 17. Sean Padula, number 18 from Virginia Tech. Trayman Mark, number 19 from Arkansas. Number 20, Jordan Pope, Morgan State. Number 21, Javon Small from Oklahoma State. Number 22, JVN McCollum from Oklahoma. Troy Perkins from Iowa, number 23. Dre Davis, number 24 from Seton Hall. Kylan Boswell from Arizona, number 25. DJ Wagner from Kentucky, number 26. Doug McDaniel, number 27 from Michigan. Mark Mitchell from Duke, number 28. Dylan Mitchell from Texas, number 29. Terrace Reed Jr., number 30 from Michigan. Brandon Garrison from Oklahoma State, number 31. Vladislav Golden from Florida Atlantic, number 32. Kobe Bria from Dayton, number 33. Danny Wolf from Yale, number 34. Chris Youngblood from South Florida, number 35. J.P. Plegas from Furman number 36, Michael Ajayi from Furman number 37, P.J. Haggerty from Pulse number 38, Malik Mack number 39 from Harvard, Trey Townsend number 40 from Oakland, Aaron Bradshaw from Kentucky number 41, Michi Johnson from South Carolina number 42, Adu Thierro from Kentucky number 43, Zomimir Ivisic from Kentucky number 44, Otega Awe from Oklahoma number 45, Cade Tyson from Belmont number 46, Milos Uzon from Oklahoma number 47, Kobe Johnson from USC number 48, Aiden Holloway, Auburn number 49, Ryan Conwell from Indiana State, number 50. There's still more in the transfer portal, but these are just the top 50 players so far that they have mentioned about. So we will see how the tracker goes. Like I said, we have about 15 more days, so we wish them all good luck. We will see what happens and just where it goes from there. All right, so for women's gymnastics, we have the semifinals tomorrow. We have at 4:30, Arkansas, California, LSU, and Stanford in semifinal one on ESPN2. Semifinal two at 9, we have Alabama, Florida, Oklahoma, and Utah. And then we have the national championship this Saturday at 4. So by the end of this weekend, we will have a national champion in women's gymnastics. We wish them the best of luck. And for men, we have the championship qualifiers, the two sessions on Friday. First one's at 1 o'clock, second one's at 7 o'clock. And then on Saturday, we have the championship finals. So we're going to see how that goes. We wish the men's gymnastics team a lot of luck as well. Since we've just gotten to the midpoint of track and field, on NCAA.com, they have their midseason superlatives. They had the best non-collegiate record individual performance for the men. It's Colin Salmon from Northern Arizona, 1,500 meters at the Brian Clay Invitational. He ran the second fastest 1,500 meters in collegiate history at 3 minutes, 33 seconds, and 96 tenths. It wasn't just that it was impressive. He held off the defending 1,500-meter champion and several pro athletes down the stretch. Congratulations to him. For women, it was Jacoya Sears in Tennessee at the 100 meters during the Tom Jones Memorial Invitational. She ran the second-fastest collegiate history 100 in 10.7 seconds. Only Shakari Richardson at the 2019 Outdoor Championships set a faster record at 10.7. And Nico Young in Northern Arizona, he started his outdoor season last week by setting the NCAA 10,000 meter record. And then he dropped down to the 800 meters and ran a top 25 in the NCAA this year. So, Nico Young, congratulations. We're going to see what happens later on in the year. And for the women, it's Michaela Rose, LSU. For her in the 800 meters, she is so dominant that you will need to run a top five all-time time if you want to beat her. She did a sub-2 minute in the 800 meter this last weekend at the Brian Clay Invitational for her fourth sub-2 minute time in her career. All right. They also have a Live Up to the Hype Award, and they have Leo Neuenbauer from Texas. He won the 2023 title in the decathlon last year. This last weekend, he set a decathlon shot put collegiate record while scoring the third most points in a decathlon ever. Yeah, I think he's ready for it. Rakovalvi just finished the indoor championships. Now she's in outdoor. She has, last week at the Brian Clay Invitational, set a collegiate record in 10,000 meters. Congratulations to that. The last award they have is the Under the Radar. You have Luke Brown in Kentucky. And they're talking about him in a triple jump. He has not lost to a collegiate athlete this year, jumping 16.40 meters, 16.48. And he is a freshman right now, so we're going to see how he goes. And for the women, Tamar Chapman of Texas A&M, she scored 6,219 points in the heptathlon, which is a nation-leading mark. So even though she didn't break a collegiate record, her performance made the number 13 all-time collegiate performer. So that's how it starts. I think that's going to be a very unique year for her this year. We wish all these athletes the best. Now, ESPN has an article saying how a federal policy changed the past for Service Academy athletes. Air Force Academy had a pro day on the 13th. The reason why they went there this time is Air Force has the 9th best winning percentage in FBS football and the 2nd best mark among group of 5 teams. So, even though they will not be able to anymore jump and play immediately in the NFL, whereas they have been before, next year the athletes are going to be required to serve 2 years in the military, as has been a long established process until 2019, before having the option to pursue professional sports while completing the rest of their service commitments and reserves. 2 years being away from the game is a tremendous step, as said Chet Gladchuk, who served as Navy director since 2001. We don't guarantee anyone that they're going to make the pros, they're going to try out, but if you've got a young man come up the ranks here and develops and rises on good enough, why shouldn't he get to take that shot? This policy has been a subject of debate over a year, especially since December 2022, when a passage in the National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA, stated Academy not obtain employment, including as a professional athlete, until completing the commission service obligations. It created an uproar because at the time, Army linebacker Andre Carter II was projected as a possible first-round pick, and it gave the impression the rug had been pulled out underneath him. Their response was impactful. Legislators moved quickly to adjust language grandfathering those who had arrived at service to Cavs in 2019 or earlier, therefore Caden Wade football players be eligible for the 2023-24 draft. But why have the rule at all? It's something athletic department officials and all three service guys are so to find a good answer for, and uniformly believe goes against the best interests of the military. So for the NDAA for fiscal year 2024 that was approved by the House and the Senate in December, that was signed into law by the President on the 22nd. Tucked deep in that bill is the call for the Secretary of Defense to submit a report to the Committees on Armed Services of the Senate and House by March 1st. The report would include a legislative proposal to update and clarify the legislative framework related to the ability of Service Academy graduates to pursue employment as professional athletes prior to serving at least 5 years on active duty, and retain the existing requirement that all Service Academy graduates must serve for 2 years on active duty before affiliating with reserves to pursue employment as a professional athlete. It also required a report that included every Service Academy graduate will release a deferred from active service to participate in professional sports and a description of their career progress. So basically, they're saying that while they're going to have to do their commitment, which they understand, they signed up for, they get it. But because of how the NDAA is set up, they either need to serve at least 2 years or 5 years. But they put it in a way where nobody would realize about that. And the athletic directors, they're frustrated because their players, if they're good enough to make the NFL, say you go and start doing your service commitment, you get hurt. well, then you're not going to be able to try to go, and that's going to be something that's going to be, I won't say a travesty, but it's going to be frustrating for them because they're looking forward to, if the chance could happen, to go for it. I mean, Keenan Reynolds, he had a record-setting career at Navy. He was able to get drafted with the Ravens, and you don't see it happen very often, but this, it's frustrating how Congress, in this situation, they were quick to make sure that honor and duty above all else, which, yes, that makes sense in some ways, but if someone's able to be able to do well professionally in a different sport and then come back and fulfill their agreement, there shouldn't be anything wrong with that, but according to this, there is. So we're going to have to wait and see what happens with that. Although next week, we're going to have an NFL draft special with myself, Tyler Turner. Let's see, who is the other person we have? David Hyland will be there with us as well. But this has been the Top 25 Rundown. You can find us on the Sportscast One, or you can find me on Allen F. West on Twitter, or Allen.West46 on Instagram and Facebook. Everybody have a great week. Let's see what happens.